Good evening. My name is Brent Bear, so you probably know that. This is my wife, Carol. This is the first time that we've actually done something like this where we both stood up and tried to talk together. And I want you to just think about this. I am an exhorter and I love to speak in front of people. And so for me, I'm about the same heart rate up here as I was sitting back there. But please honor my wife, Carol. She's more of a teacher and she loves to teach children. So this is stretching her a little bit. So I just want to honor her. My father-in-law, when we went to get married, and you're going to hear some of our story, said, when it was getting pretty serious, he said, well, if you want to live a normal life, Mennonite life or whatever you call it, said, don't marry Brent. But so I told her a little bit ago, this is part of the abnormal life that you chose. Because I guess he saw I wasn't going to probably sit still very long because I have moved a lot in my life over different places. So let me just go a little bit farther. Why are we sharing this session? And I believe Samuel kind of opened it up and just talked about the fact of there's a remnant, and you are the remnant, and there's also, or some of you are, there's also, we're here to talk about dating and courtship and singleness and marriage, anything that encompasses the Christian life. We're going to be talking about dating and courtship, so we are going to have a little bit of a focus on that. And I was going to just ask, is there any young men here that are thinking of asking someone the next month? Now that's a joke. I was going to quickly follow it in case somebody accidentally raised their hand. We're not asking you to get out with that, but so keep that to yourself. Okay, I'll try to get a little more serious here. So something that I've been thinking about just in my life, especially in the last year, is the fact that what is actually life as a Christian? And let me just read some verses that you've heard before out of John 12. Verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it, and he that hateth his life in this world shall keep it unto eternal life. And the reason I'm sharing that is because all of life, what I'm discovering, to really find true, honest, like, awesome life, takes some matter of death. So in order to do many things, you have to kind of die to something else and not do that. In order to get married, you have to die to your own self and give parts of your life. I had to give up all my finances to Carol, and I had to give up things that I would have maybe done. I would have done more traveling. I had to give that up to get married. But I also received something like really awesome when I got married to her. So there's something you give up in order to receive, and I want you to hear that through what we're going to share tonight. And just to think about that in all of your life, even in your single life, you give up things if you want to get something. So I want to talk a little bit about that. What we're going to actually share today, and I'll just kind of give just a brief overview, there's 3 points. And I'm going to give 3 foundations for life. And it will apply specifically to dating, it will apply to marriage, it will apply to where you're at even as a child, if someone is younger here. We're also, this is why Carol's going to do this with me, is that we're going to kind of share some principles. We're not here to just tell you a bunch of do's and don'ts, but we're going to tell you just some deep principles that we found that we feel are very accurate for what we've experienced in our life. But interspersed with all that, we're going to try to tell you a little bit of our own journey, and Carol specifically is going to just open up and just talk a little bit about the journey in her life and what even preceded some of what brought us together. And so I'm hoping to talk a little bit about that too, about my own life. And I would welcome any questions after this time sometime if anyone was just asked me. I was 31 when I got married. Carol was 29. And so we were a little bit older. And so we experienced a lot of single life. And I have a very, very full single life. In fact, at one point I said, I'm not even sure how I could get married. The year before I asked her to date, I was only home. And I was living in my own apartment at that point. I was only home two weekends that year because of a lot of activities that I was doing. I was actually kind of on the road doing some speaking, but also I had a lot of interaction with friends out of state. So there was a lot that took place in my single years, and so I'm going to try to bring some of that out too. So I'm going to just, maybe I should just ask you, do you have anything more in with that? I was afraid, Carol, this is kind of normal. I do most of the talking at home, and she has to listen to a lot. One morning when I shouldn't even tell this story. I wasn't planning to. When I went to go to work, she said, well, goodbye, parrot. I had talked so much that I felt bad. So the 3 points that I wanted to talk about, and I really want you to think about, are 3 things. One is keep a soft heart. overall, everything, keep a soft heart. The second is build your own convictions as a person. And I'm going to remind you when I get to that point. And then the third thing, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, is live a life filled with hope and courage. And all of these things, as I go through this, I think you'll see how they can apply to your own life. So we're going to talk about keeping a soft heart. Proverbs 4:23 might be a verse that you've heard often, but let me just repeat it to you. Watch over your heart with all diligence, for from it flow the springs of life. And I'm sharing that verse just because your heart is a precious thing to God. He created you. Your physical heart keeps you alive. But that spiritual heart or soul that God put inside of you, if you watch that with all diligence, you can have success. But it takes watching over it. And the reason that I started this as the first point is keep a soft heart. It's because I want to talk about your heart attitudes even toward the thought of even getting married. So a number of you here are probably younger, and that's kind of like out of the realm of what you're even thinking about right now. Maybe you know it's not the right time in your life right now to be married. But it's the things that you are doing right now to keep your heart are going to profoundly affect what is going to take place in your life at some point, possibly if you get married. And there's a very high percentage of people in this room that will probably be married. It often is the case. And so we're going to talk about principles that we discovered with our heart, times when we were even tempted to not have a soft heart and where that took us. Hebrews, so when we talk about heart, we want to talk about your heart and your attitude toward marriage in general. Hebrews 13:4 says, marriage is honorable to all. And in the Amplified, it says, let marriage be held in honor. In the Amplified version, it says, esteemed, worthy, precious, of great price, and especially dear in all things. God actually created marriage for some special purposes. Number one, he wanted to replenish the earth. So that was one purpose of marriage. Another is that he wanted to orchestrate and show the example of how he marries us and Christ and the church through what marriage is. And so it's a very precious thing to God. And Carol and I have noticed over the years that there's sometimes that marriage in itself is not held in honor. And so we want to just hold that up and just ask you to just think about keeping a soft heart toward marriage. When we speak that from that verse in Hebrews 13, marriage is actually a verb. It's an action to honor. I'm sorry, not marriage, honor. Honor is a verb in that case. It's something that you do. You honor it. So when you think about honor, it's something about having admiration for something or you have respect about something. So we'd just love to ask you and think about, are you honoring and respecting marriage? And our heart attitudes are often shown in our actions and the way we treat something. So I'm going to just give the time over to Carol, and she's going to share a little bit about some of the journey that she had in her life to honor marriage.
Okay. Yeah, so just to start out, I am passionate about the subject of marriage, partly because we each come from a family, each one of us here. And the family I came from, just to start even back before that, my parents both grew up in very troubled homes. My mom was very emotionally and verbally abused. I mean, very often told she was worth nothing. She was very beaten down. She learned pretty much to fight her way through life, just be strong, and also became very angry. And so that was kind of what she came into marriage with. My dad had a very sad life. When he was 10, his dad passed away, and he was raised by his mother and had three older sisters. So you can imagine how difficult that was. And then on top of it, my grandma, I knew her as a very dear, godly woman, but when she was grieving, she wore black for I think maybe 5 years, nothing else but black. She was grieving. She told her children they dare not ever talk about their dad. So my dad grew up in a very shut down home where he wasn't allowed to express emotion. It wasn't welcomed. So, and then after a very, very short courtship, and there's a lot of details I don't understand and I've not looked into just because of some of the pain there. But I know in April, my mom's sister passed away. My parents weren't dating, and by October, they were married. So I'm not sure how all that happened. But they went from not dating at all, just being people in the youth group together, to married within 6 months. So needless to say, they came to marriage very broken and very hurting. And they married each other and unfortunately didn't help each other with their pain and their addictions and their things they went to. Instead, they became each other's worst enemies. And they picked at each other and nagged and lots of things that were not fun. So when I was born 5 years later, home was, I don't think I realized it at the time, but home is never fun. Home was not good. It was not a safe Yeah, it wasn't a safe place to be. I remember being very young, probably, I don't know, 4 or 5, getting punished because I said something wrong, and I don't remember what I said. Maybe it was pretty bad, I'm not sure. And then, just a short while later, like the next minute, getting punished again because I was thinking something wrong. And so I learned very young that you really control what comes out. You control, you very much guard what you're portraying. Like, you're very careful. So, home was not a good place. And I love my mom and dad. I want to honor them. I think they did what they could. But it was not a good situation. And then later, once my sisters and I all left home, they did separate. So that's kind of where their story is. So I'm very passionate about the thing of marriage and pursuing a godly marriage and making it work. So that was my story. So when I got older, I was 17, and our church group that we were part of there in Georgia, we were having, every year we'd have meetings. And so this year I went to the meetings, and there was a guy, and he was quite interested. And so we did a lot of cat and mouse all weekend. I ran as far as I could, and he followed quite intently. And by the time the weekend was over, he had my address and my phone number and wanted to keep in touch. And I was very much like, I just want to be friends here. I'm not sure about this dating thing. And I know my sisters and I had all said as we grew up, okay, one thing we never want to do is be like mom and dad. Like, that was our main ambition in life, was never to, we don't want to end up like mom and dad. So I went into this with a lot of trepidation and some fear, and I was 17. I mean, yeah, obviously not ready for marriage. And so after a couple of months of gentle, nothing too intense of dating, I was feeling quite swarmed with just the emotion of it all, and he was very needy, and we had a very unhealthy, I listened a lot, and he had lots of issues and was needing somebody to kind of affirm him, and I was not at all excited about that, and it wasn't a healthy thing. So after a couple of months, I just told him very kindly, I really just want to be friends, and he was respectful of that, and so we broke up, and I felt very relieved. I was so glad to just be free again. And I don't feel guilty for that. I think it was a good thing to get out of the relationship, really. But what I do feel convicted for, and I don't know, we didn't say this at the beginning, but we're just going to be honest with you guys. We're not perfect people. We can tell you lots of things we did wrong. And yeah, I'm just going to be honest. After I broke up with him, I developed a very arrogant attitude, talking about honoring marriage. I was not honoring toward marriage. I wasn't honoring toward him and some of his issues. I was convicted. Going through some of my old diaries, I mean, I should have been praying for him desperately in the next couple months that he could be healed of some of those things. But instead, I became very arrogant, and I was kind of like, oh, these dumb guys, and why would you even want to date? And this is so stupid. It's much better to be free. I could get in my little escort and drive down the road and just be free and do my own thing and go to Bible school and just have fun. And those weren't necessarily wrong things to do, but it was, my attitude was very, very wrong, very arrogant. And so honestly, over the next 7 years, God just broke that in my life. I was in a couple of different relationships following that one, some that were obviously much better situations than that. And in each one of those, it was the guy, after maybe 6 months, or one, it was almost a year, that they just said, hey, we're not into this, we want to stop. And I was dropped a couple of times. And it was a very painful process. And through it, God was just breaking me. I love the passage of Deuteronomy. It says, the Lord will judge his people and have compassion on his servants when he sees that their strength is gone. I put to death and I bring to life. I have wounded and I will heal. And that's very much what God did through that process. And I just want to throw this out. It makes me sad looking back that it took me that long to come to that place in my life. Like, I wish I could have, after 6 months, said, I repent of this attitude. I want freedom with it from this. And I want to be healed. But it was a long process. But God was very patient in that process. One thing too, during this whole season, was I would just feel this attraction, you know, these guys would ask, and I would think, I would get hopeful, and I would get excited, and I would enjoy the prospect of someone pursuing me, and then I would get this gripping fear, just almost to the point of being sick, where I would just think, no, you know, this is either going to end up either in marriage or in breaking up, and those are awful options, and so I would just completely run, and it was exhausting. So I had come to the point where another relationship had ended, and I was just like, okay, God, I am just done with this. And God came to me soon after that and just said, Would you be willing to date one more time? Would you trust me, even if from the very beginning you don't know if this is going to work out or not? And also, would you be willing to get married if I asked you to do that? And I was just like, I'm sorry, I believe in being honest with God. I just said, no, there's no way. There's no way I'm going to do that again. It's too painful. And God was very gentle with me. It was, I don't remember how long the period of time went, but it was quite a while. Until finally one day I came to the point where I said, okay, God, I do surrender. I give you that part of my life. Like, if you want me to marry, if you want me to trust again, even if I don't know if it's going to, if it's going to end in heartbreak, I'm willing to give you that part. And then I felt incredible peace. And beyond that, even, I felt just an incredible joy and an incredible excitement to see what is God going to do next. And I was honestly really excited about that. And in the, about this time, too, also, I had really, maybe partly just to escape home life and just the whole dating and the guy thing, I felt like I was wanting to go on the mission field. And I thought, well, I'm just going to test it and go for a month. There was a program that I could go live somewhere for a month and just try it and see how it worked. And so in the process of that week of training before we left, I met Brent, and we connected a lot that week in training and had some very good talks. And by the end of the week, I was pretty sure he was the right one. Well, I was convinced. I called my dad, and I was like, okay, I just met the man I'm going to marry. Like, he's here. And then there was 4 months of silence. Like, I went back home. Well, no, actually, soon after that, then we did meet each other.
You came home and...
Yeah, I came home.
And you asked your dad.
I asked my dad, like, did he ask, you know, did you hear anything? And Dad said, no, I didn't. And then we ran into each other just briefly at Bible school there, just for a day. And he pretty much ignored me. Like, he just passed me in the hall and said, oh, are you surviving or thriving? And I was mad. I was like, well, neither. Like, my life is disrupted because I felt something from you and yet nothing's happening. And anyhow, so I went home from that Bible school experience and I thought, okay, I must have kind of dreamt this up, but yet I would go back and I'd read through my journals and I was like, with what he said and different things we connected on, I don't think I imagined it. I really felt like he was interested. And I went home and I took a day and just went out on my dad's field and on the farm there and just said, I'm just going to spend this day with God. So I took a picture of Brent along. And I went down toward the creek there on the farm and just built a little altar right by the creek, put his picture on it, and not in an act of anger at all. Please, yeah, don't misunderstand that. Just in an act of surrendering it to God. I was like, you know what? I do not want to battle this thing of thinking maybe he likes me, maybe not, and being angry at marriage. I just want to give this to you. And so I lit a little fire. His picture burned up, and I felt peace, and I was just ready to go move on to a different part of the farm. And I didn't want to start my dad's farm on fire. At the same time, it felt really sacred to just splash water on this little altar. So I just put out my hand on the little pile of ashes there. I'll never forget it. It was warm, and it was soft. Just a feathery soft, but very warm to the touch. And I felt like God was just saying, if you give me your heart after all these years of struggling, you give me your heart, and I'll make you soft, and I'll give you a warm, warm, soft heart. And the next year wasn't necessarily easy. There was silence, and I didn't know what was going on. But I felt a peace and a surrender that was wonderful. Yeah. So I really think, in today's world, Satan is really after our hearts. And I think, you know, we can do the right things on the outside. Maybe our marriages, maybe your families all look good, and that's great if they are. But God, Satan is really after our hearts. And when we can come with soft hearts, and as we think about marriage, whether we do end up dating or whether we don't, God, that's really what God is after, is just our soft heart.
So I'll fill it in just a little bit. So she kind of disrupted my neat little organized world that I thought I had sort of planned out. And when I met her, I didn't know quite what to do with her because I thought I would marry some person that was one of my good friends, and they would come from a good family, and we would just have this perfect marriage going forward. And I didn't know what to do because I had noticed her in the back of the room at that time that I met her and tried to look away because I knew I better not look in that corner of the room or this is going to be a distraction for me when I'm up front. But in the process of that year, I had to kind of test my heart because I had all kinds of things in my heart that weren't quite right either. One of them was that I had seen my mom and dad struggle, not in the sense that they had, but my mom and dad were just so different from each other. That I remember thinking, okay, I am going to make sure before I get married that the person I marry is a little bit more similar because they just seemed so totally opposite. And I thought, well, duh, why didn't they just use some sense when they got married and realize you weren't right for each other? So I had my own issues to deal with and my own ways that I needed to learn to honor marriage and honor what God was doing. And so there was a lot stirring in my heart. What Carol and I were trying to talk about, though, in this section on keeping a soft heart is that there's kind of two extremes that people go to. You go to one, just condescending, like, I don't need marriage. I can be fine on my own. In fact, I was older when I got married. I enjoyed my single years. I had a blast. I had a huge amount of friends that I had just developed over the years. I was very active in doing things and going places. And so there was some point in my life where I was just like, I don't need marriage. On the other hand, there was times when God actually had told me that this is not the time to get married. But that is the one side, is just being real condescending, like, I don't need that. And then the other side, that's the other extreme that we've actually, both of us have seen people have, was saying, I don't know what, like, I have to have this at all costs. It's something I have to have. So on the one hand, you don't need it. Or on the other hand, I must have this to be happy. And if I don't have this, I can't live a fulfilled life. And I'll just say this, as I got into my later 20s and had a desire to be married, I got to points where I had a little bit of that in my life too, not in a desperate sort of way, but just like, God, why aren't you giving this to me? And I had to actually, my heart became hardened just toward God, just because I felt like he was not fulfilling what I felt like he should in my life. So those are two extremes. And the point that we want to really talk about is what Carol said, is that softness is what God's looking for in your life. And it needs to continue through your whole life, not just as you look at marriage, but having an attitude toward marriage of just softness, that God, if this is something for me, I will walk into it even though I don't know the future. If it's not something for right now, I will have softness toward you, and I will still reach out to you, and I will still honor you, God, even though I don't have something that I wish that I would have in my life. So that's kind of what we're really wanting to just bring out with the thing of keeping a soft heart. Now I want to just share just a little bit. Now that we were talking about Carol from the perspective of a lady, I'm going to just share just a little bit from a guy's point of view of those two extremes too. So I shared just a little bit. I'm not going to take a lot of time with this, but I do want to point out the fact that marriage and dating and courting is actually a personal choice. And God gives us human people the choice to do that. And we have a choice to be single and we have a choice to be married. And so, or say it this way, I was talking to someone recently, and said, well, we have a choice to pursue that, but it takes two people making that choice. So that is actually something that is a difficult thing when you maybe, some of the people in your life wanted to date you and maybe you didn't. It's a personal choice. And Apostle Paul did admit that he said, I wish all men would just be like I was, because he was free to do some of the passions that he had to live and work for God in situations that maybe weren't as easy for a lady to be in. Second thing is there are times when people maybe decide that it is better to live single than married. We have some people that are on the field in Iraq that actually would have that. In fact, I find it kind of a phenomenon that I have noticed over the last number of years. I work with a number of people on the mission field, and you can almost always tell the ones that are the diehard long-termers. They're like, from the guy's point of view anyhow, they're like, I don't need marriage. It's better. God wants me to be a single blessedness to serve the Lord here. And I think, well, wait about 3 or 4 years and you're going to start seeing your need. But that is something that sometimes people have, is that they would maybe feel like it's better to live unmarried, and that can be a choice that you make. The third thing, though, then, is that sometimes the timing is just not right. And likely that's where some of you are at, is that the time's not right. But you still need to honor marriage and wait for the timing that is right. I'll just say then the other thing is sometimes I see guys that are just completely rejecting marriage, but it's partly because of selfish reasons and just because they want to live for themselves. And that is something I see in the kind of the world today. It's a phenomenon that people are starting to notice, that people are getting married later and later and later because there's many other distractions and things in life that can keep someone's attention. The other extreme with that is that they might just have a lot of fear and they don't want to walk forward just simply because of that fear. So that's the part of maybe I don't need marriage. The other side from a guy's point of view is I can't live without marriage. And I was around a number of friends that I saw that they wanted to get married so bad they just about were asking about anybody. In fact, I had a friend that told me, he said, yeah, anybody with a skirt on he likes. And I thought, okay, this guy is a little bit over the top. Like maybe he should be praying a little bit more for the timing about this. So it was a little bit, I just looked at it and I thought, okay, grow up. So that's the other side of things. So part of having a soft heart, though, is this. It means to honor God and honor marriage and trust God for what he brings in your life for the right time. And as you open yourself to trusting God, he will lead you on the path that you should go and that's right for your life. Doing things in God's timing, that is part of having a soft heart. So I'll just share from my own experience. When I was around 20 years old, God just impressed on my heart and just said, I just thought logically about it, and I thought, you know, one of the most important decisions that I'm going to make in my life, other than accepting Christ as my Savior, is probably to get married. And I thought to myself, you know, being one of the most important decisions in your life, this needs like some serious amounts of God in it. And I thought to myself, why don't I just start right now before I even farther to start praying about my future marriage and praying for God's timing and God's will. And I even made it a point, I just decided, you know what, God actually knows who I'm going to marry. I don't, but he does. I can actually begin right now praying for the person that I'm going to marry. And so I started praying every week for that person. In fact, some days I would just imagine, you know, maybe she's going through a really hard time right now. I don't know what she's going through, but I'm going to pray for that person. God, you know wherever that prayer is ending up, but I'm going to pray that you will move your hand over that person and guard her. And I would just tell you secretly, sometimes I thought maybe I prayed guys out of her life because...
Praise God.
Yeah. But honestly, you can begin to pray for that future marriage partner. Now, there is a question, because some of you ladies might say, well, yeah, but what if I'm not going to get married? What if someone doesn't ask me? Where does that prayer go? We are told in Scripture that the Spirit hears our prayers, and he will pray to God and intercede to God in the way that that should be. So he can take that prayer that you pray to God, and he can change that into whatever direction it should be. Maybe he will say, God, that isn't right for this person, and you and I know the future in her life. But we say, she is saying, I want a soft heart. And so we take that prayer, and I will use that prayer to pray for what you do want her to do in life. So maybe it's not to have a marriage partner, but it might be that she's supposed to minister into someone else's life. So that's how that can be. The Holy Spirit is well able to do that, and so just trust him in that. So building a foundation and doing things in God's timing is part of having a soft heart. So number one, I just said to just think about building a foundation and starting now in your life. That's why I say this session is very, very relevant, even if you're not to get married. But just begin to build a foundation about it. Have you ever asked God about the timing? So I actually did ask God. I just said, I know I'm not emotionally ready. I was 20 years old, and I knew I was not emotionally ready to get married. And I just said, okay, tell me when it is the time. I felt God strongly told me this is not the time for you to get married. And so it went a number of years until one day as I was walking across the hallway in a place that I was at, I remember when God actually spoke to me right as I was walking and just said, okay, from now on, it would be okay if you ask someone out. And so then I knew that. But to find the timing and ask God is just something I would encourage you to do. The other thing, and I shared this just a little bit earlier, and I'm going to go a little faster, but do you have any preconceived ideas? Because I had a lot of preconceived ideas about what it should look like. And God had to systematically, one by one, break those things down off of my life until I was actually willing to step out in faith and ask in a way that asked somebody that I didn't know, and I didn't know her family, and I only knew a little bit of a few things from her background. I had no reason to go to Georgia. I was from Holmes County, and she lived in Georgia. I had no reason to go to that place. I knew if I would show up in that church, she would know, okay, I know why you're here. But there's preconceived ideas that we have, and sometimes just trusting God to work through and allow you to walk forward, even though you might not know what the outcome is going to be for something. The last thing I want to share about having a soft heart is, well, last part of this section, is just to learn to live life unselfishly. That's a huge part of having a soft heart. And to begin to just start your life in the age that you're at, living it unselfishly for others. Now, we're going to just talk a little bit next and go to the second point about building your own convictions. Do you have anything more on the first thing? So I wrote right at the top of my notes here, tell everyone, please listen to this. And really honestly think about this. Why are we here? We're not here to preach at you. And we're not here to try to put ourselves up. We are here because we really, really care about you. And if you don't hear anything else that we share tonight or that I share tonight, please listen to this section that I'm talking to you about, building your own convictions. Because this is something that is really a need for us in our day, because there are people that are walking through life with no convictions. So I'm going to just ask the question starting out, do you have any of your own convictions? Are there things that you know, I am going to do this, this is how I'm going to live my life? Do you have convictions in your life? And I wonder if you've ever thought about this. Do you have convictions in your life that are actually even stricter or more than what your parents have put on you? I remember when I was in early parts of my life, I said, you know what? My church allows me to dress in this way, but I'm going to dress actually even beyond that in this way. And I don't mean in an extreme. So I came from an environment where people were dressed fairly loosely. And I just decided, you know what? I'm going to dress in this respectful way. So a lot of the people in my area would wear all kinds of t-shirts. And I just decided, you know what? I'm going to have sort of a standard that this will be about what I will wear when I wear certain items of clothing. So having your own convictions, and I'm not going to get into that in a deeper way. And I just love to say this to some of you parents here in the room. You know, just a warning to you, you can tell your children at the time when they go to get married what they should feel and how they should act in certain ways. But a lot of that should be happening actually right now. Helping your children to build convictions right now will serve them much later. If it comes to the point where they're starting to date and you're trying to tell them what their convictions should be, likely they're going to honor you and do those convictions, but it's not going to be in their heart. And so by the time they get married, you have no idea what they're going to end up like in the next 5 or 10 years, because it's at that point that you have to release them, because they are to, the Bible says, a man shall cleave to his wife and make create their own home. So let's just talk about convictions a little bit. And I want to just think about this. If you were to die in 6 months, what would people say about you? And have you ever actually even thought about that question? I actually was challenged to think about that, because a couple of years ago when I was in a place where I was getting some further training, I was in a class that was talking about speaking, and we had to actually give a speech. And she used an example of someone that was a college professor that had discovered that he had a rare form of cancer. He was going to die. And he was asked to get in front of his whole entire college campus. He was an older adult, but in his middle age, probably 35 or 40. And he was asked to talk and tell people, if I the three most important things in my life, what would I tell you to do? And so we were actually supposed to share in our talk what are the three most important things that we would like to pass on if we knew we were going to die in 6 months. So it really caused me to think about what were the most important things that I would have held to in my life. What were the convictions that were in my life? And I'd like to just challenge every one of you to just think about what would you want people to say about you if you knew that you were going to die, like on at your funeral. What do you think people would say about you? So let me just ask some of do you want to be known as the most fun person to hang out with? Do you want to be known as the most selfless person that anyone knew, that was always there to give a hug and a caring arm and a listening ear and helpful advice? So just a question. So just think about your life with God, deep questions that you need to answer that will relate to your conviction. What is the purpose of my life? Just think about, what is the purpose of my life? Define that for yourself. Have you ever thought about that? Why did God want a person like me on the earth? Why does God call, what call does God have on my life? That's another question. Do you know what the call is in your life? And you might be discovering that in the process, but what are possibilities of some of the calls that God has on my life? How passionate are you about following God? And I actually highlighted that. Ask yourselves that question, and I would really love for you to think about that. How passionate am I about following God? And in order to fulfill the above, everything that I just said about your purpose, your call, and your passion for God, what am I going to do and how am I going to spend my time? And that's what is going to form your convictions. And those are those things that you're going to take into the rest of your life. And likely, those are actually going to be the kind of things that are going to attract or detract you from someone that you're potentially thinking about marrying. And it's going to be the things that brought you together. So for Carol and I, for our life, we had a deep passion to reach out to people. And that was one of the reasons why we were both at that place at that time, at that school, that was focused on reaching out in the summer mission program. Because that was one of the convictions in our heart, was that we believe that God's call that you're supposed to go into all the world was a real call and it was truthful. And that's why we crossed paths in that place. So those things that form your convictions then, so then ask these questions to yourself. If I have that as conviction, no one here is going to say, I don't want God very much. I mean, likely. I think I know all of you enough, and I see the energy in your face. You're not going to say that. But the question is, if you say, I want God with all my heart, then what is it going to look like for your life? How will I relate to God then? Because that's the conviction that I have, is that I want to know God really deep. How it will also affect how consecrated of a life you live. It will also affect the convictions. How am I going to interact with others? It will also affect how will I obey the Bible? And what will it look like for evangelism or for living separated from the world or for living an other-centered life? How will that look like? What will that look like in your life? So you need to define some of those things, and that's why I was really wanting you to just hear this section, building your own convictions, because when you build your own convictions, then when you come to a place that you're starting to date someone else, those convictions are things that you're going to share with each other, and they are going to affect whether that person wants to walk with you through your life. Because there were people that I was with that I had actually thought about dating, and as I was just in social interaction with them, I realized that they do not have the same convictions that I do, or if they do, they're on a much lesser level, and it made a difference of the type of person that I was interested in marrying. And so this is a very, very serious subject to develop early in your life. So I'm going to just talk just a little bit about this because it starts really, really early in your life. So all of the things that I shared above, like your convictions related to time, your purity, evangelism, work ethic, honesty, your pursuit of God, are things that are going to affect your future marriage. So I'm going to just single out two of those things. I'm going to single out time and purity. And I know that I'm already getting fairly long here, so I'll try to keep it moving. But when I think about time as a single, what are you spending your time with? And I just want to just think about it. What are you spending your time with? Is it beneficial? And will that is your heart attitude soft toward God if he says, I don't want you to spend your time doing that? Is it building you up? So the questions we could ask are, and Carol and I actually talked about this, we were just saying, you know, we didn't grow up in a time period where there was computers. Believe it or not, we're not that old, there was computers. But we did not have cell phones where we would be able to text back and forth. So all of our dating was on the phone, basically. I used to get these like $100 phone bills. And I remember thinking my friends can never get a hold of me because in the evenings, oftentimes my phone was busy because I dated as a long distance, usually about 10 hours away, or at one point only 3 hours away. But how do you use your cell phone? If your future wife was with you and would see what you're looking at on your phone, or if your future wife was seeing how much you use your phone or what you were accessing on your phone, would you actually be ashamed? Would your future wife say, you know what, you're on your phone so much? And I'm honestly not trying to come upon you. My children always say, Dad, put your phone down, like, stop. So I have an issue with it too. But would your future wife say, you know, do you even have time for me? Are you on your phone so much? And so that's real issues that we have to grapple with, and it's convictions that you need to think about now because it's going to enter into how, it's going to affect who you're going to marry. Do you have more to say on time? Okay. I'm going to just walk a little bit into the issue of purity. And I think all of us know that we want to enter into marriage pure. And I know when I met Carol, we both had a deep, deep desire that we want to have a pure relationship with each other, and we want to enter into marriage pure. But you know, it can be something that you want, but you're going to have a conviction, and it's going to have to be strong enough that you're going to hold fast to those convictions, and you're going to take certain actions in order to make that a reality in your life. Because when you get in the heat of the moment of dating someone and you really are attracted to that person and care a lot about that person, you can fudge on those things and start walking down paths that you should not maybe go down. And so when I talk about purity, I don't want to just talk all about about the physical part of marriage and the purity that comes from having pure thoughts and pure motives. I want to just remember that your purity starts as soon as you even are aware of that word. It starts at any young age that you are, and as you grow in that, it's going to take all kinds of different forms. So it's going to, the amount that you want purity and the convictions that you have toward that are going to show up in the books that you read, in the movies that you watch, and then the music that you listen to. Those are three big areas that you can show by your convictions what your purity level is in your life and how much that you do desire that. Now, you know, an extreme example of not purity is in porn, and we know that that's a rampant thing around us. And I would just love to, I'm just going to talk just a little bit on this area right here, but that is such a huge detriment to our society, and we all know that. And yet at the same time, the enemy is just coming, seems like a flood in that area. And if that is something that you struggle with, get help for that. it is a not helpful thing in your life. And there, it's, I was going to say it's not something to be ashamed of. Maybe it is something to be ashamed of, but it's something that you should just admit and get people to help you with. I've seen people deeply trapped in that for years, and it's a horrible way to live, and it will take you nowhere good. And you know that you don't want to walk into marriage like that. I know Carol and I have a friend that just has struggled and struggled because some of the guys that she dated ended up having such a hard addiction with porn that they actually ended up breaking up, and they actually ruined their chances. She's a very, very nice young lady, and they ruined their chances of having her as their future wife because she's finally just said, look, if you can't handle this area of your life, I'm not willing to walk any farther. Now, I'd love for you to add your piece there.
I think too, there's two things I was thinking. One is, and I say this in love, but we tend to think of it as a man's issue. But in today's world, it is something that women struggle with as well. And I think maybe even they feel more guilty about it because they know it's not as, I don't know, maybe not as much of a feminine issue. And there's even more shame with it. So if you are a lady and you struggle with it, find someone to talk to and help break that, because there is freedom from that. The other thing too, I think maybe as women, and this would be coming from the general perspective, it's easy for us as women maybe to kind of look down on the guys and be like, oh, they've got this gross problem. And I'm not saying it's right at all. And I'm not saying they shouldn't have victory. But I think in talking with one of my friends, she was just mentioning how, you know, these guys have this issue. And she was like, well, are there no pure guys out there? And then we traveled on and we're talking about different things. And a couple minutes later, then she was just saying how, oh, she's been struggling with food. And I just thought, dear lady, you're going to food, the guys are going to porn, like, and yet we're judging them and saying, oh, they have this bad problem. And if you look at the heart issue, it's both of us, men and women, having a heart that's pursuing something else, not God. We're finding something else to fill the need that we have for completely being committed to God. So as women, let's recognize that, you know what, we are sinners too. It's not just that men have this bad issue.
So I'm going to just talk briefly just on the issue of purity in another form that you maybe have not thought about. And I actually reached out to a friend that I have in Wisconsin. He's a leader of a church, but he's quite a bit younger than me. And I just said what I'm doing tonight. And I said, what would you share if you were getting up front? And right away, he fired back a text message to me. And he said, well, you know what? This is what I would share if I was getting up front. And I thought to myself, you know what? That is such a real issue, because I'll just be honest with you. I believe, without realizing it, that I struggled with this some in my past before I had started dating Carol. And that was the issue of getting to know people on a level that was maybe not dating them, but it was almost like you were half dating them because you knew them so well and you were interacting back and forth so well. This is what he said. He said, young people today don't seem as smitten as what they used to be. And we're really good friends, so I know he is very smitten with his wife, and he knows that I am very smitten with Carol. He said, young people today just don't seem as smitten as what they used to. There's a general attitude of almost boredom about the whole dating thing. That troubles me. I have a theory or two. One is that when you spend your whole life relating to the opposite gender in a casual manner, you're really quasi-dating lots of people simultaneously, which makes you kind of jaded and ADHD about relationship, and it makes it hard to feel excited about any one person in particular. And I thought when I heard that, I thought, you know, that is actually true. It's like you are so in relationship with people and you're texting back and forth that I, for me at that time, there was a lot of email going on. And I remember I had some email relationships with people that at one point the one lady said to me, she just said, I just want you to know everything you're sending by my email, my dad is actually reading. And I remember thinking, oh, I better be careful here a little bit. And I don't know that I was sharing some things. I don't know that I was saying some things that I shouldn't say, but it was just a reminder to me that, you know what, this is not all just in private. And so I'm bringing it up to you just as a warning to think about. If you're messaging with somebody and saying things that you would actually maybe not say to them face to face, then likely it's going to a level that's actually too deep with them. There are some parts of relationship that you need to keep sacred and maybe wait until it's actually someone that is actually has intentions to date you. And I guess I wasn't sure I was going to share this, but I actually did have someone. I did not date anyone else. Carol had dated several times, but I had not. But I had actually called someone's father and just asked them about pursuing his daughter. And I remember when I talked to him on the phone, he said, well, there's actually someone else. But he said, you're kind of coming in the right way. He said, he's just been kind of like on the sidelines talking, and they're like really good friends. but they've never really made anything official. And I was actually the cause of them actually starting to date, because he just plain put it at his daughter and just said, look, either this is dating or this is not dating, but choose between the two. And they ended up starting to date. So it was just a reminder to me that sometimes you can be half dating, and it's actually, for the young lady, she doesn't really know, is this official relationship or is it not? And there's a purity issue there that you need to try to keep your heart pure and keep it only for the person that you're going to date and marry eventually in the future. So I'm going to, without going into that a little bit further, I'm going to just talk about two more things that I believe relate to convictions. And these were just areas that Carol and I were really felt strongly passionate about. And this relates to two words. One is related to guys and one is related to ladies. And we want to just use the word strength and beauty. So, man, you are strong. And I know as I grew older, I loved my strength and I loved to be able to do stuff and I loved to work out and get myself to that I could even do more than what I had done before. And ladies, you have beauty, and Carol's going to talk about that. I just want to challenge you as men to think about what it says in Proverbs 31:3. It says, do not spend your strength on women, your vigor on those who ruin kings. You know, as you look in the Bible and look at what strength is, true strength is actually standing up for what is right. One of the strongest men that we know physically in the Bible was named Samson. But you know, when you looked at his life, he was not a strong person. He was a very immoral person, and he used his strength in wrong ways, and he did not have strength when it came to having convictions. And one of the strongest people that I know in the Bible is the person that you know of as Joseph. When he stood up in a face of immorality where nobody would have maybe found out and where he could have lived an immoral life, and he was strong. And so I want to just challenge every one of you to use the strength that you have to show the future wife that you're going to marry that I can be strong and I will be strong in our relationship simply by the amount of strength that I use to be a pure person. And that's the first place that I believe God is testing you in your life to show your strength. And it's a powerful thing in front of your future person that you possibly will date to show that I have strength and you can trust the strength that I have.
And for us as ladies, talking about beauty just a little bit, I know it's kind of a delicate issue. We all tend to not enjoy it that much, maybe, or we tend to do the thing of saying, well, I'm not as beautiful as so-and-so. But I just want to say to each one of you that God has made you beautiful the way you are. Psalm 45 says, so the king will greatly desire your beauty because he is your Lord. Worship him. And the gift of our beauty is to draw people to God and to give life. It's interesting reading through the Bible. There's many ladies in the Bible that is specifically mentioned that they were beautiful. I'm just going to read the one about Abraham and Sarah. Abraham said to Sarah, his wife, indeed, I know that you are a woman of beautiful countenance. And I think we can obviously tend to do good things. Or, I mean, we can tend to go wrong places with that as well. But part of it is just accepting that God has made you beautiful. And obviously, we know, too, that outward beauty does fade. But the inner beauty that God builds and creates in us is what is lasting. 1 Peter 3 says, your beauty should not come from outward adornment, but rather it should be that of your inner self, the unfading beauty of a gentle and quiet spirit, which is of great worth in God's sight. For this is the way the holy women of the past who put their hope in God used to adorn themselves, like Sarah. You are her daughters if you do what is right and do not give way to fear. And I think fear can be a huge affront to our beauty. That's one area that we tend to get. Fear can really rob us of that. And we have, I think, two extremes. One is we tend to cover. And you see Muslim ladies that are totally covered from head to foot. They're definitely modest. But they're covering so much beauty and are so hidden and scared. And the other way we can do it, even emotionally, is just to feel like we're aloof and we have nothing to offer and think we're not good. The other thing we can obviously do is go to the other extreme and flaunt our beauty. And we have the story of Bathsheba, and we all know that was a wrong approach. And you can use it to attract men. And I think for us, we in our settings wouldn't be as tempted to do something that far out. But I think we can just subtly push lines. If we know something's maybe not quite modest, but it's not too bad, it's easy to push boundaries just to draw that attention. And I would just like to call us back to what God calls beauty. I love the story in 1 Samuel 25. I won't go into all of it. But sit down sometime and just read the story. It's beautiful. It's about Abigail. It says she was intelligent and beautiful, and she hears about what her husband does when he tells David's men they can have no food. And she gets busy, and she loads up an enormous amount of food on donkeys. says she worked quickly. She sounds like the Proverbs 31 woman in action. And it says, when she saw David, she quickly got off her donkey and bowed down before David with her face to the ground. She fell at his feet and said, "Pardon your servant, my lord, and let me speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say." She made her petition. Then David said to Abigail, "Praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day." Then David accepted from her hand what she had brought him and said, "Go home in peace. I have heard your words and granted your request." And I love how she came. She didn't flaunt who she was. At the same time, she didn't hide and say she has nothing to offer, but she reached out and God used her with her wisdom and her beauty and turned David from doing something evil. And I think if we can humbly accept what God's given us and accept our beauty and yet offer it. And I think just talking about marriage being a example of Christ in the church, if you think of a man with his strength and then you think of a woman with beauty, him leading and her following and just giving, him giving his strength and her giving her beauty, it's a beautiful picture if it's given in that way without selfishness and without impure motives. So I think as ladies, if we can just learn to accept help from men and admit that we are the weaker of the two genders and just say, we do sometimes need help. There's things I can't physically do that I need to ask my husband for. I think we can be very blessed as we give that.
I wasn't sure how much I was going to say about this, but I'm going to just share it here. We've dialogued a lot about the subject of beauty because I know Carol's pretty passionate about that she believes that you should remember that your beauty is to draw people to God. Mm-hmm. And I know she shared just a little bit about our story when we first met. And I'll just be honest with you, I was a little bit of a hard egg to crack. I would go to places, and I had been with enough people that I knew what it felt like to have a crush on someone and just be like, you know, you went someplace and you'd meet someone really nice and you'd think, wow, your little heart would start going a little faster every time you're around them, and you'd kind of position yourself in the room maybe to be close to that person. And I soon saw that, you know what, that's not the road I want to go on. And so I started just blocking off feelings. But the truth of the matter is, I'm just going to be honest with you, Carol's beauty is actually what drew me to her. And as I talked to her and saw her character, that was what made me then pursue her. So God actually does use that. And so I want to just let you ladies know, just remember, there is a use for beauty. God actually created you the way you were because he has that for a special reason. But it's not maybe for yourself, it's for God, and it's to draw people to God. But just remember that, because that is something that God uses, and he's going to use in your life, and he created you, and so it's a good thing in its proper place and in its right way, not flaunted, and also covered to a right level. So I'm going to go from there into something that we have also found in our life, and this was something that happened while we were the first week that we had met. I'm going to just tell a little bit of a story. I just want to point out to you that one of the things we talked to you earlier a little bit about keeping a soft heart, and while we're talking to you about convictions, well, you know what? You might have a conviction that you want to go down a certain path or you want to be a certain way, but sometimes inside you feel the uncontrollable things to know even how to live right. And this is maybe the way I should say this. Do you ever feel like inside you just have a heart of stone? You don't know what to do. You can't make your heart get, it feels cold inside. Well, there are sometimes when people sin against us that our heart begins to harden. And through that hardening, we aren't open to God or we don't know how to move out of that. And I want to talk to you just a little bit about getting beyond that heart of stone that some of you may feel. So Ezekiel 36:26 says, "I will give you a new heart." This is what God promises for those that are following him. "I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh." So I just want to tell you that, you know, you can be trying as hard as you can and having just a lot of passion for God, but you may not be able to move a certain level in your life just because of something that you don't know how to get beyond. Mm-hmm. And if you identify that in your life, I just want to challenge you, find help for that. So this is how it kind of came out for Carol and I. When we met that first week at that training school that we were at, something that happened in my life that was a bit unusual was on the Friday, we were planning to have an all-night prayer meeting on Sunday night. And on that Friday morning, as I was praying, suddenly I had a powerful vision of a young lady with a blue dress, which I later found out Carol had a dress that looked just like that. But I just saw a young lady, didn't see her face, and I saw a rope around her legs, and it was tied all the way back down to the place I knew was several states away, and it was tied to her parents, and that girl could not get free from that. And as we came into that time of prayer, I actually didn't tell anybody about it. I just didn't know what to do with it. I just knew, okay, there's people here that are not free, that are bound up, that need to be free. And just through a series of events that evening as we were praying, I finally just said it out to the leader, and I just said, well, I had this vision, and I'm not sure what to do, what it all means. And he sort of jumped on it and said, well, okay, this is actually what's wrong here. We can't seem to get beyond this wall here. And we ended up praying for Carol because that was exactly what she was feeling at home. She was ready to leave for Nicaragua knowing that she was going to go into a pretty dangerous area, and yet she was afraid that she was going to hear of a phone call that one of her parents had committed suicide because of things that happened in their life. Sorry if that was too personal. And so when we began to pray for her, we were able to actually pray to break that off of her life, to release her from that so that she could actually go on with the calling that God has on her life. Yeah. Did you have more to share?
No, that week, we were praying that night of prayer, and I felt so heavy, and I knew I couldn't go. Like, I was so burdened with things at home, and yeah, I wasn't sure how my parents would handle. They were going to be in the house by themselves now for the first time since us children would have left. And yeah, no, you're right. I couldn't go. I was not free at all.
She was just bound up and not able to go. And the reason that we're sharing that is because we want to just tell you that if you have things in your life that is maybe something that has come through your parents, maybe it's some form of abuse that you've experienced, maybe it's something else that has created a heart of stone in you, God mm-hmm. wants to heal that so that you can go forward mm-hmm. in your life. And it is probably going to hinder your dating, but have hope, because God wants you to walk beyond that. And we just want to speak out, both of us together, mm-hmm. is we want to speak out that God can take you past that. God's power is much stronger than any generational sin that is in your life. And I had to actually trust that as I went into my relationship with her, because I was actually really fearful that maybe my marriage was going to end up with the marriage that she had seen in her parents and in her grandparents and down in her line. But we have the power, Carol and I have the power through God's power in us to break that cycle of sin, and you do too as well. But it may take people around you and a strong community around you. You can be the person that makes the change in your generation. And I guess that's just the thing I wanted to leave you with, that is that you have the power through God in your life to break those generational chains that are around you, and you can move to a place of much better existence, and the next generations after you can be blessed, actually. So this is the third point that I had wanted to share, and it's just brief. I'm going to just keep going very quickly through this because our time is getting away, but live a life of hope and courage. And the reason I feel passionate about it is because there are times as we get older that sometimes the hope that we have in our life begins to wane. And that's something that once we lose our hope, we begin to crack in some of our convictions. And then some of our heart becomes less soft and can become very, very hardened. And I just want to challenge you to live a life of hope and live a life of courage. And this is, do you want to talk a little bit about what I was saying, just the thing of hope to get married? Or should I just... Well, what your dad said.
Yeah, I know there was one point in my life where my sisters all somehow came along and all neatly at 22 nicely got married to great guys. And I remember at one point somebody had just started dating one of them, I forget who, and I remember just kind of crying out to my dad and just saying, well, what's the deal? Like, so they all come along and get nice guys, and, you know, the guys can ask. I was like, what can we do as ladies? My dad's really quiet and very gentle, and he just looked down at me and said, Carol, what were his words? You have more power with prayer than what the guys do with asking. And it gave me so much hope to think that, no, I can pray, and that makes a difference. Obviously, the guys do the asking, and that doesn't mean that we use our prayer to control. But it just gave me a lot of hope knowing that, no, God has given us an avenue. We can be honest with him in our prayers.
So one of the reasons that I wanted to have her share that was just because I have seen over the years sometimes that I meet people and I meet young ladies that are maybe getting older that aren't getting married, and I see some of the hope waning in their life, something that they thought would be that isn't. And sometimes I've seen them begin to walk down paths that I feel were destructive to their life because they began to just give up hope and then live in ways that were not what I knew was in their heart to live. Mm-hmm. And keeping hold of the hope, that always living as a soft person with hope. I know Carol has an older friend I was thinking of her as 50, but I know she's now much older than
probably
that.
60,
probably
right?
60s. That has always kept a soft heart. Mm-hmm. We actually know the person that she would love to marry, and it's an older man, and he just simply has not asked. And we've always felt bad wondering, why did they not get together? But somehow, she has been able to keep a soft heart mm-hmm. and to begin to keep a hopeful heart, even in spite of the fact that she knows that maybe that will never be. But yet, she can have a soft heart in that hope. And the last thing I want to share in that is just the thing of having courage. And I'll just be honest with you, this was something that I lacked when I was in my 20s and was probably one of the reasons that I was older when I got married. And this was just simply the courage. I mean, it actually literally freaked me out to actually call someone's dad. I remember I would write it out, and then I would go over it, and then I would practice it, and then I'd wait about a night or two, and I'd practice it again until then I finally would build up the courage that I'm going to call on the phone, because generally people that I would have asked, very few people, but were from a distance away, and then would try to like express myself over the phone and these words that I had written out. So I really struggled with courage. I realized one day, though, that it says perfect love casts out all fear. And when God brings perfect love in your heart, you can get beyond that fear. You can walk over that, what looks like a high mountain in your life of having not having courage. The second thing is I have actually seen guys that were so overcome with fear related to getting married that they actually just didn't pursue marriage because they said, I can't do it. Or else they began to just believe a lie. They said, nobody would want to date me. In fact, that was actually something that I struggled with for a long time, feeling like nobody would actually really want to date me. So those are two things that God is calling us higher in. He's calling us to have hope, and he's also calling us to have courage and to begin to walk with courage. Now, I know that this is going just a little longer than we were thinking, and I'm not surprised, but I was wishing that it'd be our time would go a little shorter. I would love to just take a 10-minute break, and then we'll come back, and I have a little bit more to share.